Hello everyone, I'm Margot Coatsworth and this is Ask Margot, where we answer your questions. By way of introducing myself today, I'd like to tell you about a little book I've written. It kind of encapsulates all that I believe. It's a message that needs to go far and wide. I have a plan to give away 1 million copies of this little book. It's a mini ebook, a very short read, and it's called Tell a Different Story. And I'd like to read a little bit of it for you today. But before I do, I want to talk about maths, about compound mathematics, exponential growth. Do you know that if I was to read this book to you today and then ask you to read it and recommend another person, invite another person each day to also read it, it would take us just over a month for each of us to add another person and scoop up the entire planet just by adding another person to the mix every day. I would have to find 33 people, 32 people, but the next day everyone would only have to find 29 people. And the last episode, or the last person, would only have to find one person. It sounds incredible, unbelievable, doesn't it? But I've checked it out, and it would take just under 33 days with this principle of each person adding another person every day to reach 7.9 billion people, all of those on our planet. Think about that. I think it's incredible. See how powerful we are if only we latched onto it. I get so inspired with this, I hardly know what to do with myself, and I just want to get my book and this message out to 1 million people. I've got to get my thinking cap on as to how to get people involved in such an experiment. We could call it, How Long Does It Take to Change the World for Good? So exciting. Please go to my website to read this book. I've asked people not to pass it on, but to get it from us so that we can track the numbers. I did think about doing a Guinness Book of Record endeavour with that one, but I haven't done anything about it to date. So that's my invitation to you today. Read Tell a Different Story. It's under Transformational Words on my website, which is margotunlimited.com. I want to read you this little excerpt from it. It'll give you an idea of what the principle is that I'm talking about. Tell a Different Story. A tiny book to let you know your genie is always listening. Your words are his command. Often when you read a book, it's hard to sum it up, as there are so many messages and stories within it. The intention of this little book is to do just the opposite. It's not 101 ways to change your life. It's not a 25-step process. The points are few, succinct, and short. Short enough for you to grasp the first time you read it and to remember the principles easily. You can prove for yourself that this method to change your life really works, starting today. Now, in this little book, I've got three quotes, which are messages from the universe, which if you listen to this show of mine, you'll understand about that. So they are as follows. If there is one message that the world needs to hear at this time, one message that has the power to tip the scales and bring a real shift, it is this. You must all learn to tell a different story. What you think is expressed in words. If you would change the way you think and speak, then you would truly see the power of your creative word. You have been telling yourself and each other a story of what you do not want. You have been focused on what is wrong, what has been wrong, and what you expect to be wrong. You have projected into your present and your future everything that you fear and worry about. You are creating what you don't want by the stories you tell. This is going to be a one-point little book. There's a single message here, but it's hugely powerful. It's one that must be told. If you grasp this message and run with it, it has the power to change your whole life. You have the power to change your whole life by utilizing this message. This is another message from the universe. The world is sadly full of limiting conversations and statements that do not allow for each of you to flourish and grow as you were designed to. You have limited yourselves to hereditary conditions, accepting that you may or will be suffering the same fate because you are related to someone else. You have seen yourselves as limited to your past, or by your finances, time, or where you think you fit in society. You have felt you couldn't do something because no one around you has done it, or no one around you believes you can do it. You have been limited by thinking you are too young or too old, not smart enough, not moneyed enough, not connected enough. You have told your stories and they have not served you. They have shut you down and kept you stuck in a place that isn't worthy of you. And it's time to change all that, and here's how. Just three things. Firstly, listen to yourself and others and you will hear what's being said. You must learn to pick up the can't, won't and don't words. Just spend some time and listen, especially to your own voice. Be aware of how you speak to yourself. Be aware of the stories that are being told. Keep listening until you have become highly sensitized to negative, limiting talk. Don't say anything, just listen. You cannot rush or brush over this step. Awareness is vital before you can move forward. This may take a short time, or it may take a long time. That depends on how serious you are about this and how aware you are prepared to make yourself. You'll know when you are there. You can't change something unless you see what needs to be changed. You'll hear yourself when you say, "My greatest fear is," and "I'm so exhausted I can hardly think." You get the idea? We're telling these stories about ourselves. Secondly, turn it around and make the change. Every time you think a thought or make a statement or agree with a statement that is limiting, immediately turn your point of attraction around by turning the statement around. Say to yourself, or out loud if you can, because speaking out loud is double reinforcement, because you're hearing yourself saying it and you're not just listening in your own head. For example, how many times have you heard, "I get a cold every winter"? Oops. Change it. Say, "I'm remarkably healthy even in the winter." Never talk about being sick. Never say "my" when referring to any condition you don't want. If you say "my," you're taking ownership of the condition. If you can avoid it, don't even use the words of the ailment, and certainly never write them in capital letters. That's giving them importance they don't deserve. Don't treat things you don't want like they are your pet. Never say, "I'm in debt," or "I have no money," or "I'm sick or depressed." What you say after "I am" is very telling. Make sure you identify with what you want and who you want to be. And the third thing in this little box is just repeat that. That's all you need to do. Listen for what you're saying and turn it around so that you're telling a different story. You must first become aware, you must secondly turn the statement around, and thirdly you must do it all the time, from now until the end of time. This is not a short, quick fix. If you fill your life with this process, it will become second nature to you. Actually, it will become first nature, as it will resonate with the essence of who you really are, the highest part of you. What you are doing, and you will be in full support of yourself. A tiny bit more about this book and then we'll get on to our questions. Here are four ways, quick ways, to support yourself in this process. One is, become your own expert at turning negative statements around. You can make this a game, especially when it's too much of a stretch for you to take on and fully believe. There are some statements at the end of the book telling you how you can turn them around, but just pounce on them and become your own expert. Two is, turn away from negative influences. Follow your inner prompts to make changes for better, more positive choices. Be aware that some friends, habits, and connections will most likely fall away or fade in importance, as most people like to spend time with those who share their philosophies. If you're choosing a new one, you will no longer be sharing them with people who don't resonate there. Number three, write out a statement of who you choose to be. It's really powerful to write things down, your goals, your intentions, your statements about how you want your life to be. And you should write that in the present tense and about you in the first person. Read those morning and night. It's very good for settling into your subconscious. And lastly, it's great to find somebody you can do this with, because most people will think you're a little bit crazy. So you don't tell them about it. You just do it quietly yourself and keep your antennae out for somebody who you can share this with. I have a brother I can share things with, and we pull each other up when we need to and encourage each other when we need that. If you're not satisfied with your life, you must tell a different story. And as you do, you will see that the power for change is in your hands and in your words. Imagine you have a genie, and that your genie, the universe, is listening to you and is obliged to give you what you ask for, because that's his job. So whatever you say, he'll hear it and then pull that into reality for you. Just picture your genie listening to you, waiting for your command, and then tell the story you'd like him to materialize for you. Make it a game. Okay, thank you for that. Now, to our four questions for today. This first one is from Leo. He says, my daughter has challenged me, saying that I more or less ignored her growing up and that she really can't get past it. Even though as an adult she's in touch with me, she's told me she feels an underlying resentment for what she feels like big gaps, for what she feels are big gaps in her childhood, where she says I should have stepped up and should have been there for her. She says I was absent emotionally and that it still affects her when she doesn't like the feeling. I'm a bit shocked, but I guess she's right, and I don't know what to do to fix it. What do you suggest? Well, Leo, all parents fall short at some time, and we all feel that to a degree, I think. I imagine all children feel let down by us at some point in their lives. Whether the letting down is small or great, real or imagined, doesn't really matter. If a child is feeling it, it's real enough and important enough for them, and it should be addressed. I'm a strong believer in addressing something properly and then letting it go. You don't rehash and you don't drag it up afterwards, but it must be sorted first. I don't believe we should ignore things. Just because they're swept under the carpet or not spoken of doesn't make them go away. It doesn't fix it. But when addressed properly and fully, they can then be set free for good. I would speak to your daughter and ask her to lay out her grievances. You must then own anything that you feel at fault over. Apologize and ask for forgiveness. We don't do that very often. It's quite powerful. So ask her for forgiveness for the real things, but also for whatever she perceived your part was in her feeling not fully cared for. Then, and this is important, I've done this with my children, say to her, you offer her a heartfelt and complete apology for any and everything she feels you could have done better as a parent, both the identified things and anything not mentioned. Then turn it back to her and say, can she forgive you of all of that? So that will require some participation from her. And it's important that she agrees to this, because this is about freeing herself but also freeing you in the same process. Once she's said yes, thank her and get her to acknowledge that this is the end of the matter. Some people have a tendency to want to come back to things and go over them, even though they have in theory been sorted. There's no more that you can do than what you've just done. Tell her you wish to leave it in the past and see both of you free from it, because that's what she wants, so emphasize that, freedom from it. You must tell her that you will both never need to address it again or chew over any of the things of the past, because you have sorted it. Then, Leo, If she should be tempted to bring something up again, you'll need to cut her short by reminding her that you already addressed it and agreed. She'll get the message, and then it's up to her to choose where to go from that point. You're not responsible for that part. The only thing you could do further is to change the way you do things now. And that's important because sometimes people feel it's easy to say, oh, I'm sorry about that, if you don't do anything differently. If you think that's required, then ask her what she wants from you now. How can you do better? Be there. Give more. Ask her. Make her tell you. Make her identify it. And if she doesn't know, you must leave the ball in her court by telling her she should think about it and that you will wait for her to get back to you. Can you see how this works? You're taking responsibility, you're asking for forgiveness, but you are requiring her to participate in this. Be calm, don't rise to any bait, and agree with her as much as you legitimately can. Agreeing with someone diffuses anger and frustration because there's no fuel for their fire if you acknowledge that they are right. Unless, of course, they aren't. But in principle, you want to see if you can get alongside them. This is not meant to be confrontational, quite the opposite. Agree when you can, and if not, just listen quietly and let her speak. Don't let her keep repeating things, though. I'm not sure what that is that people say, oh, as I said. I think, yes, you've said it, I've got it, so let's leave that and move on to the next thing. Only good will come from addressing things like this because it's not about her telling you off and you feeling bad. It's about collaboratively working together and both of you will be involved to sort this. I hope that helps. I think it's a very proactive way for you to deal with the situation. Best wishes with that one. Number two today in our questions. I was thinking about our recent episode and how love languages came up, and I thought we could look more closely at that because it's such an important concept to get a hold of in a relationship. It's about knowing the other person and what makes them feel loved. The five love languages are 1, acts of service, 2, giving of gifts, 3, quality time, 4, words of affirmation, 5, physical touch. And apparently we all have a primary one. You might have two that you think are both yours, but one is usually a stronger one. If you are clever and care to see your romantic relationship grow and flourish, actually, it's not just romantic relationships. You could probably look at your children too and make sure that you are connecting with them on this level. If you want to make your other person happy, then you must think about this. If you're exceptionally clever, you'll be onto it already. But it's good to think it through and make sure you're being the best mate you can be. You'll know for yourself which love language is yours. What makes you feel loved? When someone brings you a gift, flowers, a book, a little foodie thing. When someone supports you by an act of service, fixing something, ironing your shirt, changing the light bulb, making you dinner. By someone giving you their undivided time and attention, by words and compliments, acknowledging you, by touch, a hand on your back, sitting closely with someone, holding hands, much hugging. We can have two of these languages, but pick the one that's most dominant. So if that is your love language, what is your partner's? Which of those things fit for them? Is it the things you do for them? Is it the things you bring them? Is it the time you spend with them? Is it the way you acknowledge them? Is it being in contact with them physically? Okay, if you can identify, then ask yourself if you're showing them love by way of their language or yours. If theirs is words of affirmation, then you must compliment and encourage them and not simply bring them flowers or pat them on the back. This is about knowing and tuning into your other person. If you've never thought like this, then you should decide what you're going to do today to show your mate that you love them by doing what makes them feel loved and validated. I have a friend who introduced me to the five love languages. And she said once to me, quite sadly, that her husband's language was acts of service, which she diligently tried to do. And hers was words of affirmation and touch, which he did not care for and did not do. I felt so sad when she said that to me. And I thought, oh, seems like a bit of a life sentence. I hope he has tuned in and is now focused on how to best demonstrate love to his wife. The smartest people are those who don't settle in the known in their relationships, but opt for continued growth. I know that may sound like a bit of a joke, but if you're juggling a lot in life, things that concern you, people are often surprised when someone ups and leaves them. They didn't know because they weren't tuned in. Stay tuned in. Can anyone run away from someone who is making it their mission to ensure they do whatever they can to make the other person happy? And if both are doing it, then surely that's a one-statement recipe for living together happily ever after. Right. Question number 3 on our list today is about how to let go of someone who you thought was going to be your very own important other person, you know, the one that you would have and hold. This is a question about lasting love, a question about how to get your head around, let alone your heart, around the loss of finding someone is not staying in your life as a romantic partner as you'd hoped. I have spoken with men, more than one, who after their marriage is broken up still cannot say why. That's very sad. There's a lot of heartbreak around. I spoke with a woman the other day who said there is nothing worse or harder to live with than unrequited love. Actually, she said that in front of her current husband. It's a tough one. I happened upon a chap on Instagram the other day who I really love. He's an attorney who specializes in helping with arguments and communication. He's got the best energy. His name is Jefferson Fisher. He's seriously cool. Actually, I wrote to him to see if he'd like to marry my daughter so I could keep him in the family. But I haven't heard back yet. He had a really clever way of talking about this subject and how to manage this kind of situation. Pay attention now because this is a doozy. People talk about ghosting. Well, I don't like that word. I just call it rude. If someone contacts you, you answer them. If you ask them not to contact you anymore, but they keep doing it, then they have the problem and not you. And if you don't want to hear from them, then you really have to stop answering them. There's a fine line sometimes between charming persistence and creepily having your wishes ignored. I've experienced both. Many people have. But back to Jefferson. This is what he said. He calls it turning the page, and it's very sage life advice. This is the hardest one, this first sentence. No response is a response. And it's telling you to turn the page. Because if they wanted to be part of your story, they would. Let's all have a moment of silence while we absorb that. He continues, but they are not going to be a part of your story. They are just going to be a sentence on your page. The lesson is not to ask, why aren't they in the next chapter? It's to ask, why were they written in the first place? And he says, you're not going to know until you turn the next page. I think that's quite sobering and really interesting, good, solid advice. Sometimes we just need a bit of encouragement to move on. So that's the answer to the question of how to deal with a love that doesn't last or a person you want madly who doesn't want you. Get out there, find out what else is there for you when you turn the page. Sometimes, this might sound a bit trashy, but just go with me for a minute. I liken it to houses. You find a house and you fall for it. You must have it. It's practically perfect in every way. But the house sells to someone else. How awful, how unthinkable. You pine for your lost house. You had such plans for it. Time goes by, and you go back on Trade Me to find out if any other houses have come onto the market. You see one. You like it. You want it. you'll take it, no matter the price, you love it. I'm just playing with you here. But we do have the most amazing quality that means we bob back up to the top and are happy to go again. We do it in all kinds of ways, in romantic relationships, with businesses, with all kinds of things in life. We just come back for more because we think we can do it differently. It's going to be different. People sometimes say all the good ones are married, or there are twice as many women as men at any given occasion. I say, who cares? You're only looking for one. One. Those are good odds. Okay, fourth question today is from Albert. Oh, there's a lot of relationship ones today. He is newly married, and he and his wife have pooled their resources and operate a joint account. He has a question about how to manage money in a relationship because he said he's feeling that everything gets sucked into the joint pot and he's missing his autonomy. And when he does buy something for himself, he feels he's being judged a bit by his wife. He completely trusts her and they're both quite focused on what they're trying to achieve financially together, but still he misses his treats. Well, it's a great thing that you are on the same page with your bigger financial plans, Albert, and the management of your money. Working from a joint account can make a lot of sense, but I believe strongly that each person should have their own agreed allowance, even if you pull all resources into one pot. You should discuss with your other half how much each of you will have as discretionary money. That way, you can decide what you want to do with that agreed allowance. You can buy gadgets or tools or magazines or shoes or books, or just stash it if you choose. If you like fine wine, but it's not a part of the agreed joint spending, off you go and do that. If she likes fine shoes, ditto. If you have lots of dosh, you could go off and buy a car or a house. Actually, I know a man who hid cars he bought from his wife. Wives will often not happily tolerate excessive expenditure on multiple cars. The point is that we have to retain some autonomy and individual personal choice when we partner up, and allocating an agreed amount for absolute autonomous spending is a very good thing for the health of a relationship. It's always wisest and easiest to set these important things up right from the beginning. But caring, considerate people who want the best in their relationship will do it at any time. If you are a man who watches over his wife's every expenditure, stop that now and agree to some money so she can do what she likes. I once had a friend whose husband tracked her every cup of coffee when she went out. Ooh. Respect, consideration. As I always say to my babies when they were small, caring, sharing, and living in harmony. That was our motto. Well, it was certainly mine. The other thing is that quite often I would say to them, if you don't stop fighting, you'll never be taken on another holiday. But that's completely off topic. I did long for my children to grow up so I could stop telling them off. Please do send your questions in to us at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz and I will answer them. And don't forget, I have a quiz on my website which you may like to take. It'll give you some insight into your life. It's called the All of You quiz. Or you can just click the contact button at Margot Unlimited and send your question in. Good. Well, today we have answered four questions and now we're going to move on to more elevated matters. And to finish, we go to our message from the universe for this episode of Ask Margot. Ask Margot is aired fortnightly, but if you want more from me, you can go to my podcast on Spotify. It's called the Margot Unlimited Podcast. For that, I don't even wait for questions. This is a lovely, simple, short message from our source. This message seems almost too simple to be stated, but if you realize that everything starts within you before it ever shows up in your world, it will make perfect sense. All change in your life starts inside you. Here we go. You know the drill. Breathe in and breathe out. Then repeat. Breathe out all that does not serve you, and you know what that is. And then breathe in all you know to be true, and that you desire. Fabulous. What a way to live. What a way to manage your world. Thank you, and see you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.